2024 is the year of podcasts, and we want to let you know about a brand new show that is live right now. Join with me to share the good news about the Worthy of Everything podcast. It's just one of the two hosts, Jedra Lasso. Jedra, you've been working on this podcast in the background. Our team has been very excited as we've been preparing for its launch. How does it feel to know that the episodes finally are out there and we're moving forward every single week?
It is so exciting, and I am just excited to see where God takes it. And I have so much hope that it is going to be an incredible blessing to the listeners.
Amen, amen. But as I understand it, this is a show tackling the issues of mental health through the lens of the gospel. Can you share just a little bit more about the heart and the intent and who you're really trying to serve through the Worthy of Everything podcast?
So I personally was freed from depression, and as I've come to understand my freedom from sin and identity in Christ, I start to recognize all these amazing gifts that God has given us. So yeah, just exploring and hearing awesome testimonies about how to walk out true intimacy with a loving father who pursues his kids.
Oh man, sounds like a good time. If you want to check out the show, lovereality.org/podcasts and look for the Worthy of Everything show.
The world doesn't think that the gospel can change your life, but we know that it can. And that's why we want you to hear these stories, stories of transformation, stories of freedom, people getting free from sin and healed from sin because of Jesus. This is Death to Life.
We weren't being loving to our children. We weren't being present with our children. We weren't being a light to anybody. And it was horrible. And I was so disappointed in God and myself that I'm like, this is just like the thoughts that I had were overwhelming of just my life was miserable. It was horrible. I hated every minute of being awake. All I wanted to do was go to sleep and just never wake up.
Yo, welcome to the Death to Life podcast. My name is Richard Young, and today's episode is with my sister, Courtney. And Courtney's story is not for young ears. There is some stuff about self-harm. It's a sobering episode, but it is so beautiful. And to hear her energy and her life, this is a story about somebody who just believed the lies that led them to despair and how truth came in and saved the day. And Jesus says, you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. And this is one of those stories. So we're just going to jump into this thing. This is Courtney. Love y'all. Appreciate y'all. Buckle up. Strap in. So Courtney, where does the story start? Where are we going? Take us back in time for however far back you want to go. Where are we starting this mug?
I feel like it's important to start from the beginning.
This is a very good place to start.
So I can just start from where I grew up in church. I just recently found out that it was my aunt who actually led me to the Lord. I guess I asked her in nursery if I could ask Jesus into my heart, and she was like, yeah. And so she prayed with me right there. I didn't know that till
her. What's her name?
Aunt Lisa.
Shout out to Aunt Lisa.
Yep, it was her. But we went to a church where it was my Uncle Eddie's church, and it was fire, brimstone kind of church. I don't remember much of it. Only him getting really excited and running up and down the aisles and sweat and yelling, just excitement for whatever it was that he was talking about. But I was really young when we were going there. I was kindergarten age.
Is he still a preacher?
No, he retired. He did it up until retirement.
And his style was just running up and down and letting people know what's up.
Yeah, but it was more it's very old school. So we did hymns, which nothing against hymns. I love hymns. We had a projector that we would put up an occasional worship song on. And
it was like, Lord, I lift your name on high.
Yes. Yes.
The greatest worship song of all time.
Yeah. And it was you're one wrong move away from going to hell. And I just, from that, I just remember every year being I promise I'll be good. I won't do all the bad things that I've done before. Just give me one more chance to get it right. And we went there for a long time, and up until middle school. And there was no, nobody had a good Christian like lifestyle. Like my home life was very destructive. My parents were constantly splitting up, getting back together, very abusive. And then my dad had a drug addiction for 8 years. And so then we started going to a new church, which Aunt Lisa took us to.
Shout out to Aunt Lisa.
Aunt Lisa was there.
Was your background, was it religious? Like your family background?
No, I mean, my mom tried her best. Like she didn't really, her parents sent her to church to keep her out of trouble. It's like that whole thing. And then my dad grew up in a religious home. So he was forced to go until he no longer wanted to go. So my dad never went to church with us. Just like holidays, Christmas, Easter, that kind of stuff. And then my mom took us with my aunt. But at home, no, there was no. I think we prayed before we ate our meals. If we were.
So who was God then?
Really? I was just afraid of whoever God was.
Honestly. Like, I don't know who he is.
No.
But I'm scared of him.
I'm scared of him. He would smite me down. Yeah. No, I don't remember much of him other than the Ten Commandments and just being afraid of doing something wrong or going to hell. Like that was probably the only reason I asked Jesus into my heart. It was because I was like, I don't want to go to hell. And also there was the age of accountability was like a huge thing. And I remember
stressing,
I guess it's like an age that you get to where you should know right from wrong. And if you choose Jesus, then you should be living right. And I always stressed about that because I'm like, what age is that? So I just made sure I just covered every age with, I'll accept Jesus.
I saw this Instagram reel or this TikTok, and this guy is talking about how he got addicted to going up for altar calls. And so like he would go every week and the pastor's like, Steve, you were up here last week. And he's like, you said to be like, if I'm not 100% sure that I'm saved to come up. And I'm like, I'm sure, but I'm not 100% sure. And so then he got addicted to going up during the altar call. And so is that kind of what you were doing just to cover your bases?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Because I didn't want to go to hell. I don't think I had any interest in, because I didn't know who God was. So I had no interest in that. I just didn't want to go to hell.
Yeah. Like I know what hell sounds like and I've seen the cartoons. So yeah. I'll take the other one.
Basically. Yep.
So how did that work out for, like, behavior change?
I mean...
Like, how old were you when you were, like, really afraid of this stuff?
Probably when I was, like, 10 years old. Because I remember praying, like, the Lord's Prayer every night, going to bed, just in case if something were to happen while I was sleeping, I would know where I was going. So I would say probably 10. And that's like when I really was like, I want to try to be good, but I also didn't know, other than the Ten Commandments, what good Christian living looked like either, because there was no model of it that I could look to, and no one was telling me either. So I'm like, I don't know. I just knew that I wanted to do the right thing, but I didn't necessarily know what the right thing was. I think I was a good kid.
I bet you were an amazing kid.
I was a middle child. So I had my crazy ADHD brother and then my antisocial sister. So I was like the golden child.
And you were like a peacemaker too, since you're that middle child?
Oh, yes. Actually, my mom used to call me her peacemaker, and she made me a little jewelry box with this whole thing in it about how I was a peacemaker. So that... Anytime I would start to fight with somebody, I was really quick to be like, no, I'm the peacemaker. I'm not going to fight with you, but I am right. But I am also the peacemaker. So you can just calm down.
Isn't that interesting how good things stick with us as well as bad things stick with us? If you get labeled a thing, like it can be such a positive thing in your life. If it's a positive thing, you're labeled. But even then, you'll start to identify with that thing rather than like your true identity. And that can even get
Oh yeah,
a little mixed up.
Yeah, 100%. If you ask probably anyone, even extended family, everyone called me the princess of the family, even by aunts and uncles. I was everybody's favorite.
It's nice to be the favorite, but then what's not nice is when everybody believes you're the favorite and you're just like, that gets weird, right?
Oh, 100%. I got grounded once and it was like everyone turned on me because I lied and my uncle called me out on it. Called my parents real quick. And yeah, everyone was like, now we... And then that was like horrible and crushing. I was 13 going into high school.
What'd you lie about?
It was stupid. I was at a friend's house and there was this text like, hey, we're having a bonfire, come over. So we went and it was on Facebook. And my uncle was like, hey, did you know Courtney went to this bonfire? Which there was nothing there. We were eighth graders. So it was like going into freshman year. And my dad was like, did you go to that? And I was like, no, I didn't. And basically they're like, let's just call your friend's mom and see if you guys were there. And I was like, no, don't do that. Don't do that. And I fought.
Why didn't you want to say you were there?
Because my parents said no to everything. I wasn't allowed to do anything. If I would have been at my friend's house and said, hey, can I go to this bonfire? They wouldn't be like, no. And then none of us could have gone. So I was like, they don't need to know. They don't know where I'm at. It's fine.
They don't need to know.
How are they going to find out? Dang.
It's foolproof. Can't lose. We're just going to go eat s'mores.
Right.
And they'll be none the wiser.
Right. Exactly. But no, I got caught and I got grounded for a whole summer. For lying, yeah.
For a whole summer. What does that mean? Grounding for the whole summer.
I wasn't allowed to go to my friend's house. I was only allowed to go to cheerleading and then home. It only lasted for a month, if I'm being honest. But it was the worst part was because my family was so upset. Like my grandpa, I remember it was 4th of July and we went to Bob Evans like we did every year. And it was like super crowded and my whole family's there. Aunts, uncles, cousins, everybody's there. My grandpa tells the waitress, this one down here is a liar. And I was like, oh, gosh. I went from being like up here to way down at the bottom.
This one right here is a liar.
Yeah.
Lord have mercy. Man, that, I feel like this is a big deal in your life. Or it was a big deal in your life.
It was, yeah. Because I was used to people loving me. And I was only as good as how people were like treating me. The more love that I got from people, the more good about myself that I felt. So I was like, went from feeling super good to then everyone hating me and then turn hating myself.
When your parents or your grandparents use the old, I'm not mad, I'm disappointed. It's really about turning up the guilt and shame to the next level because this will get them to stop. Not effective in the long run or maybe even the short term.
No.
It's just, oh, you're disappointed in me. And they're thinking like, if our kids just really hate themselves, or I don't think they're thinking that, but then maybe they'll stop this behavior or something. But it's not a heart change.
No. No. And if anything, it was almost worse because then I worked really hard to get everyone to like me again. So then
start liking you.
It looked more like crying all the time and like feeling sorry for myself so that they'll give me attention. I think that's like when I started cutting. Not really. I think I did one actual thing, but I was like, look, this is how sad I am. This is how pitiful I feel right now. Everyone hates me. Yeah, I used a lot of manipulation. Old Courtney was like gross in manipulation. Just so that I could get back into good graces or someone feeling sorry for me so they could puff me back up.
Yeah, you gotta, these are the tactics. If we're living in that kind of world, what are your options? You gotta figure that out, right? Or else, what are you gonna do? Sit there actually being a bad person? No, you gotta get them to see who you actually are, right?
Yep.
So we manipulate. Yep. You're going on into high school and you're trying to be a good kid because you got caught lying when you were 13. Mm-hmm. Did you behave pretty well?
Nope. I mean, to an extent, yes. Like, I knew definite, I don't know why, but I had things that I was like, I'm not going to do this. I might do that if I, you know, get to that place. If
the stars, what were the might do's?
I mean, it all was like relationship stuff. So like, I might go past the boundary that my parents want for me if I like that boy enough or whatever, which thankfully never happened. Thankfully, I have super embarrassing stories of just like how sheltered I was. I had no idea about the opposite sex at all.
Innocence is good.
It's also really embarrassing, but it's really,
why is it so embarrassing?
It's good because nothing happened. I was protected, but also embarrassing in the sense of like, I just didn't know anything. Like one time a kid asked me for pictures and I literally just sent him a picture of me in like shorts and a t-shirt. And I was like, hey, and he was like, that's not what I mean. And I'm like, isn't it? You asked for a picture. Like, this is what I'm wearing. Oh. That's not what he meant though. He didn't mean those pictures. He meant.
Okay. You think that's embarrassing? I see that as so sweet.
Yeah. No.
I just see that as endearing.
Now it's nice. Then it wasn't, because then the next day it was like, she doesn't know what that means. And I, you know, I got called a prude a lot, but I didn't know. And I saw my friends in relationships with boys and doing things. And I was like, they're a mess. Like, they're hurting. And then I met my husband. So then everything changed.
All right. So, okay. But before we get to that, what were the non-negotiables? Like, I'm not doing this.
Sex. I don't know why. It's just, and my parents weren't like, we weren't, like I said, we weren't religious. We had started going to a church. I should back up a little bit. We started going to a church when I was in middle school, going into high school, that my dad got delivered from his drug addiction. And so we were like, we were in it. And there's this whole purity culture at the time. The Jonas Brothers were doing it. I think Demi Lovato was doing it. Everyone was doing it.
And if the Jonas Brothers are doing it, that's a lot of people doing
it. They had their purity rings. And my parents were like, ooh, my mom's, this is for you. I don't think they ever really gave me a sex talk. They just said, hey, just don't do it until you're married. And I was like, fair enough. Okay. And I had my.
What about drugs and alcohol? Was that a thing that you were like, nah, I'm not doing that? Where you like, maybe.
Like the taste of alcohol. My parents, there was always alcohol in the home because they were young when they had us. So they had their wild years as well. But I didn't like the taste of it. And then drugs, no. Like I never thought of touching drugs ever. I just saw like what my dad went through and I was like, nah, I'm good. I didn't even know much about drugs except Dare. That's it.
I think that innocence is a thing that we should, like, you have four kids, to keep them as innocent as they are for as long as you can. I think that's a good thing. I think they should learn things from you.
Yeah.
I want to teach my kids. I don't want the cousins or the school to teach my kids. I want to teach my kids.
Yeah.
But that innocence, I think, is just, it's sweet and it's precious. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had a purity card that I took a vow of purity, which was actually, that was a real turning point for me, was when I started to actually get involved in the youth at church. Because for a long time, I didn't want to go because I'm like, these kids are lame. I want to be in high school with all my friends. But then freshman year, I was wilding. I was trying to get with like all the guys, and not even, I knew I wasn't going to ever have sex or do stuff like that. Like, I didn't want to do those things, but I still wanted the attention of all those people.
That's a tough place to be.
Yeah, it is, because it only gets you so far, and then they're like, nah, if you're not going to do anything, then nah. And so then it's just on to the next. So I was always talking to multiple guys at the same time. That way, as soon as one of them was like, oh, you're not going to, and I'd be like, nah, then there was another one right there, ready to go.
Convenient.
Except when you get them mixed up, and then it's a mess. Then you're just in a.
Did that happen?
Yes, it did. And with the two people that I would never want it to happen with, it did. And it caused the whole thing. And I was like, oh my gosh, I need to be careful is what I need to be.
And then you went to Bob Evans and you're, this one over here is a two timer.
Right?
Grandpa.
No, that I don't think I ever told any of my family anything from my high school years. Nothing. Because I'm like, the things that I would do, like I was ashamed, especially that instance. Like I was so ashamed that I had hurt one of these people that I was actually really close mm-hmm. with, like their friend. And I'm like,
oh no,
dirty. That's just, that's not okay. Cool. So I felt really bad when that happened. But then thankfully, I saw my friends go through some things and I was like, oh gosh, like relationships are just messy. They're just like, everyone's getting hurt and we're too young. We're 15. We're too young for all this kind of yeah. drama. And so I was like, I'm just not going to date. I'm not going to talk to any guys. Freshman year, I was talking to all the guys and I went into sophomore year. Maybe I shouldn't. It's just, I was feeling all the things. It was like a roller coaster of just wanting everyone to like me and then just not wanting anyone to talk to me. So I just was like, I'm not going to date. Sophomore year, I didn't date anybody. And that's when...
How'd that go? That then for the rest of high school, were you able to keep that mindset?
No. No. No, because I... Sophomore year, I was in high school, and that's when I did like the whole purity thing, and I started getting more involved with friends at church, and I was like, you know what, I think I just want to be homeschooled junior year, because I think sophomore year going into junior year is when I went to my first church camp, and I didn't want to go, I wasn't signed up to go, but the week before I went, I got drunk with my friends. Now, there was only the three of us, so it was like just us girls. Super safe, but I felt so bad because her mom was sick, so she took some NyQuil, and I destroyed the place. I threw up everywhere because we were like drinking Mike's Harder Lemonade with Red Bull and Dr. Pepper, so I think it was like the sugar more than anything. Yeah, I don't know, because I didn't like the taste of alcohol, so I'd like take a drink and then take a drink of that. It was gross, but my mom was so mad, and she was like, you cannot be. I think she was scared for me for whatever reason. I don't know why. This is my first time ever doing anything like that. But she's like, you're going to church camp. So I went to church camp, and for the first time ever, I encountered God there.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, at camp. It was amazing. And then I was thinking about it, and I could actually feel the presence of God for myself. And I was like, man, this is good. I like this. And I came back and got super involved in church and told my mom, I was like, I want to go back to that old lifestyle of being in school, being around all that. Cause I wasn't in school for school anyways. It was like passing, basically. I was just there to hang out with friends. Like
what did you want to do with your life?
Literally not. I hadn't thought about it. The most I thought about it was I wanted to go to Kentucky University for cheerleading and then like maybe get a nursing degree and marry somebody. Have fit. Like that's all I thought of. That's
so you're talking about like the University of Kentucky in Lexington. That's where you wanted to go, like the big school, and you wanted to be on the cheerleading team mm-hmm. and get married.
Yep.
That's hashtag goals.
Yeah, that was it. And I didn't even like cheerleading that much.
Were you good at it? Were you good at cheerleading?
I was seen in cheerleading. I was a flyer. So I was at the top of the pyramid, like doing all the stunts and stuff. So I just felt seen and noticed. I didn't really like cheerleading.
You were just tiny enough to be at the top of everything and thrown around.
Yeah. And the guys were always there, right? Because you cheer.
Football games, basketball games. Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So it was great. It worked out. But no, I didn't want to do that. So I went to homeschooling, graduated early because I realized I was only like 2 credits shy of graduating my junior year. So I was like, oh, shoot, let's knock it out. Let's do it. That's when I also started dating Adam.
Well, you did your junior and senior year in 1 year?
Yes. I had to do two maths, economics and history. Like, I had to do just a double of a couple of things.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you graduated and you met Adam. Where'd you meet this guy?
Well, I met Adam at church, actually. On the bus home from church camp that first year, he swapped seats with Braden's little sister, Brooke. Yeah, it all connects. And so I knew from then that he was like, I'm going to marry her. And I had...
After she sat next to you in the bus, after he sat there, he's like, she let me sit next to her.
I was asleep. She's my wife. Hold on, I was asleep. I didn't even know he was there until I woke up. And I was like, where's Brooke? She was in the seat next
to me. And he's just like, what's up?
Yeah, literally. And I'm like, oh.
Adam, no, bro.
Yeah. So we got back and... So this would have been going into my junior year. We got back and like within, so that was like June, by the end of August, we were dating. But we weren't allowed to say we were dating because we were only 16. So it was like a courtship.
Sure.
Yeah.
When could you say you were dating? How old?
We had to give it a year. So on like our 1 year anniversary, we changed our Facebook status to in a relationship.
That was a big deal.
It was a huge deal because, for one, I had never, ever liked a guy for longer than a few weeks. And I was like, for whatever reason, obsessed with this guy. And I'm like, it doesn't even make sense. It didn't make sense. My family was like, are you sure? And I'm like...
People don't remember what life was like at the turn of the century. When you made it Facebook official,
it was a
big deal.
Yeah. It was like serious. And
this is probably a little later than 2000. This is probably like 2000, what?
10.
4, 3, 5?
10.
Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry. You are not as old as me. Like for me, it was more like MySpace. So 2010, that was prime Facebook time.
Yeah. Everyone would have known it. It was a big deal. Yeah.
And so you guys were official and you guys really loved each other. How was that going?
It was messy. It was so messy because you're 16, so you don't really know how to love. I can't even say that I wasn't in love with him. I was in a whole other thing. I would say I loved him, but it was just emotions. A lot of emotions, a lot of boundaries that I didn't want to cross even before. Like really being involved in church, were crossed. And I don't know why, I was just obsessed with him. I would tell him all the time, I'm obsessed with you. I was idolizing this guy like no other. And I would do anything he asked to keep him happy so that he would still be with me. I told him all the time, I don't deserve you. You're too good for me. And I think it just stemmed from this was like a church kid. And the boys at my church at the time were very much God loving, all about Jesus. They just were different, which is why I didn't want to be there years previous. But they were just different from the boys that I was used to, where it was like, I don't know, there was no God. So it was just easier. But now with Adam, I just felt like I had to measure up. And I'm like, I am like so new at this and you've been in it your whole life. I don't know. I'm not that girl and I don't know how to get there, but I'm going to try really hard. But I just didn't feel like I deserved him. Like he was too good for me.
I don't know how, I think I know how the story ends. I don't know the middle of the story, but I don't think this is going to go well putting him on this kind of pedestal.
No. And he did not ask to be put there either. It was all me in my head.
But if someone's worshiping you that way, mm-hmm. it has to feel pretty good.
Oh, I'm
so sure. Even if you know it's not great.
Yeah.
Feels pretty good.
Oh, I'm sure it did. Yeah. Yeah, it was messy. It was. There's a lady in Canada with some pictures of me and not wearing shorts and a t-shirt. But it's just... It got really...
Wait, hold up. A lady in Canada? How does this work?
Okay, he asked for pictures. I sent them, but I sent them to the wrong number. And I was like, oh my God. Because I'm like, did you get them? And he was like, no, I didn't. And I'm like, what? You should have gotten them. I sent them a while ago. Because I was like, why isn't he saying anything? He doesn't like them? Like, what the heck? And I'm like, oh my gosh, I sent them to this number and you need to call them right now. And you need to say something. I don't know. Just tell them to get rid of them or something. And
did that person text you back? Hi, my name is Francis and I live in Ontario. What would you like me to do with these photos?
No, it was an old lady. Adam called her. It was like, my sister sent some pictures by mistake. I'm just wondering if you could get rid of them. And she chewed them out like any good old lady in Canada would, any old lady. And was like, she really shouldn't be doing that. And I think she got rid of them. But I was like, oh my gosh.
That is hilarious. So did that teach you your lesson?
You would think. But it went through this vicious cycle. Because we were doing these things, we would feel, especially like, because we were in church at this time, and we were going, and we were involved, and we would go through these cycles where it was like, we're doing these things, and like, it felt out of control, and then we'd be like, okay, we really need to stop. And so then one of us would be like, let's stop. And then it just left the other person feeling like, oh, you don't want that anymore, like, you don't want me anymore. And then we would start again, and then somebody would be like, oh, I think we really need to not do this. And then it would just be like, it would only last a few days. There was no.
I think what's the saddest thing about this is that this is everyone's story. Like, when people listen to the Death to Life podcast and they're just like, I resonated with so much, because the lies are all the same.
Uh-huh.
The temptations are all the same. I can tell you, from the most pious pastor friend that I have to the kid who, they all have this similar experience even, that they don't know how to get out of it. They know they're not doing right, but then they get caught up and it's like almost, what are you going to do? Break up? You can't break up.
No. So you get married at 19. That's what you do.
You don't have to do that, but that's what you guys did.
That's what we did. We sure did. We both knew that we wanted to spend our lives with each other. And so we got engaged when I was 18, and we got married when I had turned 19. So we were both 19 and we get married, and it's okay. Now we can do these things without the shame and guilt that we were feeling before, and life will be great, and we'll just go into it and it'll be perfect. And then it just wasn't. It wasn't. If anything, it was like, you're married, and now it's like, why do I still feel the way that I felt before we got married? Like, it still wasn't.
So you still felt like that sex had become a thing that was dirty? Like, it wasn't like a beautiful, intimate thing? It was more like...
It didn't feel intimate. It just felt like something that we did for pleasure, but not for intimacy, if that makes sense. It's just like...
Oh, it makes complete sense.
Okay, good. So yeah, now we're married and we went through this whole thing where we were like, we don't need to go to church. We'll just do our own church at home. And started that with our friends, Braden and Savannah. And we would read the Bible and then be super critical of everything and everyone. And that was it for a while. Got back into church and started going to multiple churches at the same time, helping though. We helped.
What do you think you were searching for?
I think I was just searching for the right kind of God, honestly, like the right fit of what I wanted God to be, because I had no clue who God was. And We went to a place where it was all about grace, and that felt good for the flesh. That was a really great place, because then it was like, doesn't matter how much wrong I do, like, it's still covered by the blood. So we're good. We're cool. We can just keep on keeping on. And then the only other place that I really heard anything different was what we can get if we put our faith to work, what we can get from God. And so both of those places were not it. So it ended up being this, you know, life and circumstances and children and marriage. It was this idea that God was supposed to give me all of my desires and meet all of my needs. And if he wasn't doing that, then there was something wrong with me. And there was some kind of deficiency with my faith. And it just left me super disappointed, like crazy disappointed in life and God and family and marriage, all of it.
So it went from wanting to get married, marriage will solve your problems. You get married. It doesn't really solve your problems, but now you're looking sincerely, but it doesn't seem like you're finding what you want.
No. Yeah.
And now you have a bunch of kids. How soon did you start having kids?
We got pregnant 9 months after getting married. And Adam was like, I think we should wait longer. And I was like, no, because his siblings were married. And they were the only married people we knew at the time because we got married so young. So none of our friends were married yet. I was like, no, I want to have a baby. And really, that's like even further back. Having a family, being a mom was always the thing that I wanted to do. It's the thing that I felt good at. I was a babysitter all the time. I was good with kids. And so I was like, I want a baby. I really want a baby. I want to be pregnant. So I get pregnant. We have Finley early. We go into preterm labor at 32 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was crazy because I had no idea what was happening. And I'm in labor at my parents' house. And I'm like, man, my mom gets Braxton Hicks. It's too early. So it's just Braxton Hicks. And I'm like on the ground sweating. Good Lord, if this is Braxton Hicks and you say I still have a month left of that's insane. And then I had her like a few hours later. And the most crazy way, my brother-in-law carried me in and my water had broken Adam's brand new car. And he's like running into the emergency room at midnight yelling, she's crowning. And it was just like, it was chaos. And Finley was breached. And then we delivered her with.
So she wasn't crowning then?
No, it was her boob. They rushed me into the OR thinking they had to do a C-section, but we ended up delivering her and she spent 3 weeks in NICU. And so that happened. I'm like, man, that was wild. Not at all what I was expecting my first pregnancy to be like, my first delivery. So I was already disappointed because I'm like, man, I had to go 3 weeks. And of course, I get discharged to go home on Christmas Eve, which did not help. And the crazy thing was, is like right after I had her, I was so excited because I wasn't pregnant anymore. I hated being pregnant. It was very uncomfortable. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, I'm so excited. She's here and she's so cute and tiny. And she was 3 pounds. So she's so little and I'm 20. So I'm like, I have no clue what's going on. And then they're like, all right, we're going to discharge you now. And she's going to stay here. And I was like, what? And so I just sobbed for 2 days. And Adam's like, all right, you need to pick yourself up and God's got her. She's going to be fine. She's healthy. And we go home and I make this whiteboard of like all the things that she needs to do. And I'm like, God, you're faithful that she will do this and this. And then I think that was like the first time where I was like really, really had to go to God with something because it was out of my control. I'm like, she's in there and I'm over here. Either I can go to him and get comfort and pray and believe that everything's going to go well and she's going to be healthy and fine. And that's what happened. She just needed time to grow. And she got bigger and came home 3 weeks later. And it was good. Life was good. I felt like that took me closer to God. Mm-hmm. It's like now I had something where I'm like, he was faithful in this. So that kind of pushed me towards having a relationship with him for the first time, I'd say. And then just life.
Life.
Crazy things. And I get pregnant again 6 months later, unexpectedly, with Eleanor. And I'm like, good Lord. I remember having choice words for that one and being so scared to tell Adam. And he was so excited that it made me angry because I'm like, don't you remember? Like, we have a 6-month-old and we just went through all this 6 months ago. And it was insane. It was crazy. And he was just like, it's going to be great. Ended up having her early at 32 weeks. Literally just repeated the same thing over again. I handled it a lot better because I knew what to expect. Having just done it a year previous, they were born a year and 12 days apart. So I just did this. So
that's wild.
Yeah. So I'm like, I know what to do at least. And she was an easy baby, super great. And so I'm like, okay. Then we get pregnant again with Harrison. And I have.
How long after that? How long between that one?
I think there's a year between them, a year and a half. I don't know. It all, like, I was pregnant for 5 years, basically, is what I remember.
Mercy.
And so I have him at full term, technically. I have him at 37 weeks. And he has to spend time in the hospital because his lungs, and he had to get a chest tube and all the things. But he was only in there for 12 days. So it was like, oh, okay, that's not bad. But when we get pregnant with Jude is when I'm like, okay, I'm going to really have the pregnancy that I want. I'm going to have the labor and delivery that I want. I want to actually hold my baby when he comes into the world. I'm going to do all the things right. We're going to do this. We're going to go all the way, have a normal delivery. He's going to come home. And so my whole pregnancy, I have all these scriptures everywhere, right? I am facing this thing out. I'm speaking it into existence, all the things. And I remember it was my 35-week checkup, and I go in, and she's, you are 5 centimeters dilated. Are you feeling okay? And I was like, I'm a little uncomfortable, but I'm fine. And she's, you're having contractions. They hook me up to the monitor. She's, are you okay? And I'm like, I'm fine. I'm good. She's, I'm going to send you to the hospital to get a steroid shot for his lungs. We'll see what happens. And I go to the hospital, which was like right down the road. And I get my shot, and then I go back to work. So I'm like, I'm good. Contractions start coming, and they're like, are you all right? And I'm like, I'm fine. I'm good. I'm good. I tell Adam, can you come home early tonight from work? Is there any way you can get off early? He's, what's going on? I'm like, yeah, I saw my OB. I tell him what's happening. He's, you need to go to the hospital. And I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm going to go home. I'm going to see the kids. And I go home, and he's there, and he's like, all right, let's go. And I'm like, no, it's not time yet. We're good. And I go into the hospital, and she's, okay, you're like fully effaced. You're ready to go. And I'm like, no. And I'm like, gosh. And I remember, like,
no one's listening to you.
Right. I remember her like telling me that I was like fully effaced and being like, it was like a punch in the gut. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, no way. I was supposed to have the full term delivery, not here, not at this hospital, not here, not now. No, this isn't, it's not happening, but it happened. He came into the world a few hours later and was healthy and fine, but he spent 41 days in the NICU. And that was like the first time that I was like, I am angry right now. I'm so mad at God. I'm so mad at my body and myself. Like, why isn't my body doing what it's supposed to be doing? For one, that's stupid. And then two, this whole faith thing is stupid because here I am speaking scriptures every day and praying every day and doing all the things that I thought I should be doing. And I'm still without a baby with 3 kids at home and a baby in Columbus. Like, I was so mad. And Adam didn't get it. And he wasn't helpful at all. And I'm like, I'm angry. And he's like, you can't be angry with God. And I'm like, but I am angry with God. And you saying that makes me angry with you because you don't understand what I'm feeling. You're not even allowing me to say what I'm feeling. You're just saying that I shouldn't be feeling this way. But I am. So what am I supposed to do with this? And I was really mad for a long time. And I was so disappointed. I think I made an Instagram post about the weight of disappointment and how horrible it is, and the thief of joy is comparison and all this stuff. I was just so mad that here I am again. And this time I did all the things and it still didn't happen. So like, where was he at? That was like my big question. And yeah, just craziness. We
4 kids in.
Yeah.
And life is not what you thought it was going to be.
No, no.
And now God's disappointed you.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And Jude comes home and Adam's, I think we should move to South Carolina. And I'm like, yeah, I think a change of scenery and a change of pace would be nice. And this whole time, I'm like, there was glimmers of, I know I shouldn't be mad at God. I know that's wrong. And I know that, like, he's supposed to be good. So clearly there is something very wrong with me. So I went in and was trying so hard to be good so that I could feel good again. So we moved to South Carolina and we were only there 6 months, but we like dove into like home groups and a church there. And I was like, this is really cool, but Adam didn't like it and he wanted to move back home. So we moved back and it's 2020 and the world has gone crazy. And so we are living with my parents and all the jobs that he was supposed to get, everyone went on like a hiring freeze. So nobody was hiring and we were just left with our 4 young kids. Jude had just turned 1. I think Finley had just turned 5. So ages 5, 4, 2, and 1, I think, if we're the ages somewhere in there.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And we're left at my parents and I'm like, okay, what are we going to do? And we're listening to all these teachers of the word of faith type stuff, which is what we're used to. And they're like, you need to put your vision out there. You need to sow your seed financially so that you can reap financially. And we're like, okay, let's do it. What else do we have to lose? We're going really hard into faithing for things.
Did you start getting all the stuff? Did it work?
No. More disappointment. Because I'm like, gosh, dang it. This genie ain't doing nothing. But we are doing all the things. And the whole time, the tension at my parents' house is getting worse because we're there with our 4 kids. And Adam's not working. I'm not working. And then we're going back and forth because we were always told if God gave you a word, you needed to stand on it and not move from it, because if you moved from it, then you weren't in faith. And I was like, heaven forbid we not be in faith, because then we won't get what we're believing for. So I'm like, we're going to stand on this. Adam's like, I think I need to start my own business. He's like the Chandler Bing of the family. Nobody really knows what he does. It's just in finance. It's literally, people ask me all the time. I'm like,
he's looking at the weenus?
Yeah, literally. Yes.
So, if you don't understand, that's a friend's joke. Sorry, that's not actually what it sounds like.
Yeah.
So he's doing that. Okay.
Yeah, he's doing that. And he starts getting into assets and bonds and trading and all this stuff. And a lot of it, it's legit. But if it sounds too good to be true, then it probably is too good to be true. So we're doing all these things and it's, oh, this is going to close. And then we're going to get paid like this much millions of dollars because this is going to close. Stuff like in the millions is what we're being told. And we're like, yes, that answers everything. All our problems will be solved. And so we're going through this whole process and every week something is supposed to close and then it gets postponed or it doesn't happen or somebody changes their mind. And it's like a whole year of this. And not seeing a single penny a whole year. And so I'm like, this is a lot of tension between us because we have 4 kids and we have no income. My parents, each other. I'm like, what are we doing? We can't just sit back and wait for things to happen. God, I'm like, where's he at? He's just watching all this. If he really wants to like give me all my desires, like, I have lots of desires and I'm not seeing any of them being met. And so by the end of the year, I'm like, I don't know if God's real. I don't know if this whole thing is legit with being a Christian. I don't know if Adam and I were at the point where we're screaming at each other, and we clearly weren't being people that we wanted to be. We weren't being loving to our children. We weren't being present with our children. We weren't being a light to anybody. And it was just, it was horrible. And I was so disappointed in him and in God and myself that I'm like, this is just, like, the thoughts that I had were overwhelming of just, you're like, my life was miserable. It was horrible. Mm. I hated every minute of being awake. All I wanted to do was go to sleep and just never wake up. And I was like, Adam and I are going to separate. He's going to go stay with his dad. I'm going to stay here with my kids. And I had a whole plan if that was to happen. I'm like, I will go back to school. I will, because I was a medical assistant. So I'm like, I'll go back to school. Mm-hmm. I'll get my RN. I'll take care of my family. He can do what he wants. I want nothing to do with him. He's not helping me in any way anyway. So just remove him and that should fix part of my problem. And I was like, I'll just do that. And then the other side of it was, I felt so anxious and in fear all the time. And fear, irrational fears. Or like my kids, something happening to them, would, like, I wouldn't be able to handle it. I always had this thought, like, if any of them got cancer, I would not be able to handle it. I would not be able to be in any way good for them at all. I would be a mess. And then it's just overwhelming thoughts of just not wanting to live anymore. I just hated everything about everything and everyone and life itself, which was, I think the reason I even hated it even more is because it was so far from who I was before. Like, from my youth, like, I was always so happy and so joyful and the peacemaker and everyone loved me and life was fun. And then the older I got, just, and by that point, I just hated myself. I'm like, I hate this life, this person.
Fix it, Jesus. So this disappointment with Adam, it was just because he hadn't shown up financially? What was the agreement on why the separation was going to take place? It was just like, we're not getting along because life sucks?
Because I'm like, we need to work. And he was like, no, we need to see this through. I'm like, you're being crazy because we've been doing this for a year and nothing's happened. But then it was also just because he was home in the house 24/7 with me for the first time in our married life with our four kids. I'm like, he didn't handle them how I wanted him to handle them. I was very laid back with them and chilled, whereas he was very much just, no, you need to discipline them. They can't be acting like that. And I'm like, yeah, no, like, I know. But so, like, just him being around all the time and being there, and there's, like, nowhere to go to escape it. And him and my dad weren't getting along because my dad always raised me with the see a need, fill a need. If you need money, go make money kind of thing. And that's, I've been working since I was like 13 in jobs. Like, it was just something you always did. And here is my husband, who's supposed to be the provider of the family, isn't working a job. He's working his business, but it wasn't making any money. My dad was upset. I'm a daddy's girl. So I'm like, if my dad's mad, then I'm going to judge you the same way that he's judging you. But I also felt like I needed to defend him to my dad. And so then that put me in a weird spot with my parents. It was just so much tension. I think my sister was also living there at the time. So there was me, my sister, Adam, my parents, and our four kids in their house, which is a one story. It's a ranch. It's not big. It's 2020. You can't go anywhere. So just,
this sounds awesome.
It was so much fun. There was a lot of wine that year. I actually, that was probably the most I've ever drank in my whole life. just a lot of wine to try to, I think.
Did it provide answers for you?
It provided some escape for a minute. Felt like we were all getting along when we were drinking, playing euchre, having a good time. But, and it's also hard when you're living with people because they see everything. And there's no hiding your parenting. There's no hiding anything in your marriage. There's no hiding the tensions now between family members. It's all there. And if there is a problem, if there's a problem in your marriage before you live with someone, living with people will just magnify it on a much larger scale of crap.
So what did the manipulation then come into play?
Because, so my parents are upset with Adam. And I'm like, I'm going to be perfect then. So that way, if anything comes back, it's going to be not on me. I'm going to play both sides. And I'm going to keep my kids as perfect as I can make them, which was so hard because they're so young. And I'm like, there will be no crying. There will be no fighting. There will be no.
Jude, I know you're 1 year old, but cut it out, my man. No more crying.
Literally, I don't think he. I kept him pretty. He was attached at the hip. And people are like, that is a serious problem later on. And I'm like, you don't understand. If my dad heard them crying, it would set him on edge. And I'm like, I can't deal with my dad being on edge. We grew up in our home, even when I was a kid, where it was like, don't wake daddy. Don't do anything that will set him off. Because when he goes off, someone's going to get hurt. And not in a fun, like, kind of way. It was in a scary calling the cops way. So I'm like, now I'm here with my kids. And I'm like, I don't want them to see that side of their grandpa at all. So keeping them very calm. Trying to hide the fractures in my marriage with Adam. You know, just cleaning everything, making sure everything's perfect, look like nobody freaking lived there. So that way they can't say that we're messy or that our kids are doing messes, places. I just kept everything as perfect as I could keep it, which was very stressful in that environment and really hard, which put that much more stress on Adam because then there was no intimacy. I didn't even want, I'm like, I'm so tired. We have a kid in our room. We had a baby in our room with us. I'm like, I don't want to do it. Like, no. So there was that. There was no money. There was tension in the family, trying to keep everybody under control. And I felt like I had to do all that so that nothing could be said bad about me.
Yeah, this is terrible.
It was horrible. So bad.
And so you're starting to feel like you don't want to wake up.
No. Yeah. There is no part of me that wanted any part of life anymore. I was like, I'm so done. And I would just, it was like, it had to have been like a tormenting thought, honestly, because it was constant. There was no relief from that thought. There was just like moments where I chose to think about something else. That thought was always present by that point.
Did anybody know about it?
No. No, because we were supposed to be Christian. So if you didn't want people to know your mess, you didn't, because then it's, you didn't believe in God or you weren't a good Christian. And we were doing all the things we should have been doing to be good Christians, or at least look like good Christians. So yeah, no, I didn't tell anyone any of that. Nobody even knew anything about our lives. We kept all that very tucked away. And I was serving on the praise and worship team. So I was up there having a good time. And honestly, that was the best time because it was like 20 minutes of, I just get to sit in this spot of just this singing about God for 20 minutes. And then I would walk off and the chaos of my mind would start up again. And I just repeat every week with no relief. And so by by the end of it, end of 2020, Adam and I were like, it's better at this point for everyone if Adam goes and stays with his dad, if we just separate. And if I'm like, I should just, that's just, the thought was always there. And I'm like, I could do it this way. I could try to end my life this way. And then I'm like thinking about life insurance, because we kept that up. We kept our van and we kept life insurance the whole time that year. Lost everything else. Our storage unit with all of our stuff from when we moved, lost that. Like our cell phones, we didn't have cell phones because obviously we couldn't pay our phone plan. So that got shut off. But we kept it up to where no one really knew that, because we were in Wi-Fi and I could still text all the people that I normally would talk to in Wi-Fi. So no one knew any of that.
What about your kids? Would you consider your kids if you were going to hurt yourself?
No, I thought that they would be better off, honestly. They don't need this mess. I was crying all the time. I didn't want to get up. Didn't want to do anything. I was like,
Did you tell Adam that you were thinking of a plan?
No. And I felt, I wasn't being a good mom. And all I ever wanted to really be was a mom. I wasn't being a good mom. I was lashing out. They're little kids. I would freak out because I'm trying to keep everybody perfect. And they would do something or fight with each other. And I'm freaking out and lashing out at them. It's just, no, Adam didn't know. I didn't tell him that until later on. But, I mean, he knew things weren't okay with me mentally at that point. So, yeah, the whole goodness.
So did you ever get to a day where you're like, yeah, I'm going to do it? Or that day was just always a few days away?
Yeah, it was always tomorrow.
Praise God.
Yeah. And I never got to a day where I was like, I'm going to do it. This is it. It's happening. It was always tomorrow. I think there was that part of me that, and I always heard that people who take their own lives don't go to heaven. So then that fear of hell really kicked in there. And I was like, is there really? But then I was like, I don't know. Is there heaven? Is there hell? I don't know. Just don't want to be here. This is hell on earth.
So what happened?
Honestly, we get to December 31st. We're going into a new year. Adam and I have this tradition of being good Christians and seeking the Lord on that day of what he wants us to do with the next year, because everything we did this year was so great for the Lord. So like, what can we do for you next year? Or what can he do for us, really? And, I really just felt like the Holy Spirit was like, give me, like, read the word. Like, go to my word. Shut everything else off. And I was like, that, like, the thought of just reading the Bible stuck out to me so much. I was like, I'm going to read my Bible starting January 1st. I'm going to read it every day. And I'm like a very disciplined person. So if I have a goal, or if I like set my mind to something, I'm going to do it whether I really want to do it or not. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to do that. And started reading the Bible. And I was like, well, if I'm going to read the Bible, I might as well be intentional about reading it, or like at least making sure I'm getting something from it. So I got a journal. And within the first 4 months of the year, I went through a whole journal of what I was reading, and it was such a life-giving thing. I had no idea that reading the Bible could be life-giving, because anytime I would read it before, I would just go to it out of desperation. And if I read my Bible and I say my prayers, then God's going to answer my list of demands that I'm asking. And so I would read it before trying to get something from him. And this time I was reading it and he was just giving things to me. I would read it in the parable of the sower, and I'm like, wow, from this, it sounds like it's talking about the word. And I was always told that was money. So I was like confused. I'm like, hold on, let me see what else it says. And so I'm reading all of this. And in that time, it becomes a very intimate thing very quickly. I think because I was so desperate for something good, that in just reading the Bible, like, good things were happening. Like, my attitude and my behaviors were changing, and I wasn't changing them. I don't think I was, like, intentionally doing that. I think it was just in sowing the word in my heart, the Holy Spirit was changing my behaviors. And it wasn't until my mom had said something like, "Wow, you are such a peaceful person." And I'm like, "No, I'm not. If you knew my mind, you would know that I'm not a peaceful person." And I was like, "But wait, you're right. I actually, it is calm," which was for the first time in 9 years that there was, like, calm in my mind. And I'm like, "Well, things are changing." And Adam and I had made the decision that we weren't going to listen to any kind of teaching or pastors, because previous we were listening to everyone, just clinging for some kind of hope from somebody that things would get better. And if we did what somebody was saying, maybe it would. So we weren't listening to anybody. So it was just me and the Word and the Holy Spirit. And Savannah had reached out, and this is October, so I'm 10 months in. "I'm starting a Bible study for girls. Do you want to come?" And I'm like, "I so desperately want somebody that I can read with. That would be amazing." So I show up, and it's just me and my sister and Savannah. And I think we started in Ephesians. I thought it was Galatians, but I think it was Ephesians. And it keeps talking about your old nature and putting on your new nature, which is holy and righteous. And I'm like, "What is that? What is that talking about? What does that mean?" And so,
did Savannah seem like she knew what it meant?
Yeah. No, Savannah was on it. She was.
And you felt really safe and comfortable, like she's going to be able to guide this thing through?
Yeah, because to be honest, Savannah and I had known her since she was like 15, 14, 15. They were like our spiritual friends, even in old Savannah. She was the go-to person that had the answers and could encourage you in the Lord, even before freedom. Because I'm like, "You're in the same boat. What are you doing? How's your purity coming?" Like, you know, those were our pals. So, but this was different because it was the Word. It wasn't like her just like giving some cliche Christian thing to me to make me feel better. It was like, we're just reading the Word, and somehow we're in agreement of what it means. Which was like, I've never seen that before. So we're reading it, and she's talking to me about, "Do you know about Adam 1 and Adam 2? And I'm like, "No, tell me what's up. What's up with Adam 1 and Adam 2? I don't know."
That's so sweet.
Yeah. And then she does like the bride and being married to the first husband, all the things. And I'm like, "That makes a lot of sense. You're making sense right now. And we're reading it, so it's saying it, and you're like, it makes sense." And then Brayden does the cups. And at this point, I had been reading, but I was still dealing with a lot of anxiety, and I could feel it coming on. And I'd be like, "Don't get anxious." And the more you tell yourself not to do something, it just keeps getting bigger. And you're like, "Oh my gosh, I'm going to die right in this moment." But he does the cups, and he gets to this part where God in the garden tells them, "Who told you?" And he was like, "Who's telling you these lies?" And I'm like, "Oh my gosh." Immediately the light bulb went off that, like, all the thoughts in my mind, if it's saying something contrary to what the Bible is saying, then they're lies. And I was like, "Oh my gosh, what an idiot. I've been believing all of these lies about myself." And I'm like, that is just, my mind was like boggled. I'm like, "What do you mean?"
So this was like pretty, like, how many Bible studies in are you like getting this revelation?
4. I don't know. Wasn't many. It's like literally wasn't many. And the thought, I felt like I had control again, because here they're like, "It's just lies." And I'm like, I am not going to allow myself to believe something that's a lie. And so I'm like, "Yeah, I can fix that. And so anytime I would start to feel anxious for a few weeks after that, I think it wasn't long after that, but anytime I would start to feel like the here's anxiety coming on and all of the feelings and emotions that come with it, I would just say no. And I would just walk around and say no. Like anytime there was any kind of lie popping up in my mind.
You're like, nah.
Yeah.
Walking around your house.
Literally, my daughter at the time was like 5. And she would just walk around saying no. Like just mimicking me because I'm like, nope, not happening. And
you would literally walk around your house saying no out loud?
I looked like a crazy person, yes. But it was better than being curled up in a ball somewhere. So I'm like, yeah, no, that's not, I'm not going to allow myself to even go there. That's not for me anymore. That's not me. And a couple weeks in, and through this whole year leading up to, Ab and I obviously are still together. There was a lot of, the word I had going into that year was restoration. I was hoping like financial, but that didn't happen. But there was a restoration of relationships like me with God, Adam and I. It was beautiful. The transformation from 2020 to 2021 was God. Hmm. No other explanation. So yeah, he does that. And I realized after a few weeks of my saying no, that my friend texted me and was like, what are you doing for your anxiety? What oil are you using? What supplements are you taking? What mantras are you saying? What are you doing? And I was like, actually, I'm not. Jesus is the only thing that I can tell you because I don't do any of those things anymore. And
had you made a practice of doing a bunch of that stuff for your anxiety?
Yes. Yes.
Was it effective in any way or did it give a little bit of?
I liked to think that it helped, but it didn't actually help. It didn't help me. I liked to think that it did. If I take this oil, then I'm not going to get anxious. But the feeling was always there of being anxious, just super high strung, anxious. If something would happen, I would go off. Yeah, I texted her and I was like, no, I'm not doing any of that. Like, just Jesus. And she's like, let's meet. I need to talk to you. And so we meet her the next day at the park. And I'm like, listen, none of that is who you are in Christ. And she said, what do you mean? And I'm like, we don't live by our feelings and by these lies anymore. We are new creations. Our old self is gone. And we've been made new. So that stuff isn't for us. And she was like, what? And I'm like, right? Literally, right? Like, I didn't know either, man. And so we talk for a long time. And I send her, I'm like, Savannah, you got to talk to her. I'm like fresh into this. I don't know what I'm saying. And, but it's just, it grew from there. I was like, man.
You were passionate about it though.
Oh, I
like
was.
She could see your passion.
Yes. I told everyone all the time. And I remember, I look back now and I'm like, ooh, my heart was in the right place, but I was also a little too eager. But
how can you help it if you've gone
it was
like
good news
from, yeah.
It was good news. I told everybody all the time. And it was like all I talked about. I'm like, Jesus, it's real. He works. I was shocked. And my parents saw this transformation happen. And they're like, man, what's going on? And I'm like, the Lord. And they're like, yeah, but you were Christians before. And I'm like, no, I was in it for me. Like, I wasn't a Christian. I was too self-centered to be Christ-centered. No way. That was not it.
Wow.
And then there's always the, if that wasn't it, then what are we doing? I'm like, I was so selfish in how I lived my life before. It was so self-centered. It was all about me. Even when I made it about other people, it was still about me. I'm going to push you up so that you can pull me up with you. And even my relationship with God, it was just going to him to get what I wanted and what I needed or thought I needed. But then in this understanding, I'm like, his desires are my desires. And I didn't even have to change that. The heart he gave me changed that. And it was just, there was no more striving and working.
Did Savannah and Braden start explaining, or maybe this was early on, freedom from sin, this idea that you were free from the power of sin?
They did. Because I remember it hitting, because I got excited that they're like, you're free from sin. I'm like, what do you mean free from sin? Because I didn't know anything. And they're telling me the identity of sin and the power of sin has no claim on you. And I was like, yeah, but I wasn't really living as a Christian. So what does that mean for me? And Braden, from the moment that you chose Christ, that stuff didn't have any hold on you. You just didn't understand that. And he's like, you didn't believe it. And he was like, that is no longer you. Like, sin has no power over you. And I was like, yeah, you're right. That makes sense. And I was like, I am free from sin. And there's so much power in saying that and in believing that, because without doing anything, you just go that way. It's like before, whereas I just want to die. That's all my mind thought about. But now that I'm like, I am free from sin, that's all my mind thinks about. It's all it identifies with. And I told everybody.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break from the episode, and I'm going to bring on my brother Jean Bernard. People know him on the streets as Bees. What's up, Bees?
What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing great. Quick question, man. How long have you been rocking with Good Gospel?
I would say approximately about a year now.
A year? What has Good Gospel done in your life, man? Has it made an impact?
It definitely has, man. And I think what it's done, I'll tell you how it was before. I would say I lived an incomplete, unfinished gospel, right? Where, yeah, I felt that I needed to grind. I needed to do. There was a lot more do. There was a lot more effort and stuff like that. Sure, I received the grace, but there was this kind of payback transactional relationship that I had with God. And listening to the Depth to Life podcast and hearing this good gospel, it's completely shifted that. And it's completed that. It's completed the story of grace. It's completed the story of restoration and healing. And I can now see myself the way God actually sees me. And that's what the gospel's done in my life, in this journey.
If we want to hear your whole story, where should we go to hear your whole story?
With pride, I am episode 98. That's me, man. I've got it on my Insta. I've got it everywhere. I wear it like a badge of honor.
Let's go, dude. Man, you have given of your hard-earned finances to keep supporting this movement, this gospel movement. Let me ask you, why do you do that?
Because I believe that this is such an amazing ministry, because it's about real stories, real lives, real transformation. And people need to hear those stories. People are hungry for authenticity, and they want to hear people being raw and vulnerable and honest. And this is probably, for me, the best catalyst and also the best platform that achieves that. When interviews are done, people can get honest and share and celebrate what God has done in their life. And I noticed that there's quite a bit of death that's discussed in these journeys, but there is so much life. There's so much celebration, and it brings hope, especially for people who don't know Christ, but are in desperate need and want to know him, because it shows real authentic transformation in the lives of others.
Man, that's beautiful. If you guys want to partner with us as we move this message forward, I'm going to invite you to go to lovereality.org/give. That's lovereality.org/give. And we want you to be a part of this movement as we go forward, of people receiving the truth of who they are in Jesus Christ and how that changes their lives. So lovereality.org/give. Let's keep doing this thing. Bees, man, thank you so much, my brother.
Love you, man. Peace.
Peace.
It's like before, whereas I just want to die. That's all my mind thought about. But now that I'm like, I am free from sin, that's all my mind thinks about. It's all it identifies with. And I told everybody, unfortunately, a lot of people don't know what that means, but we're getting there. But yeah, I don't know.
What do you mean we're getting there? What happened after that?
Well, so we would tell people that you're free from sin. And they're like, oh yeah, I know. I'm like, dude, was I the only one who did it? Like, for real? And I realized that, like, people associate sin with, like, your actions and behaviors. And I'm like, but it's your identity, too. Because you identify a certain way, you do those actions and behaviors. Whereas, like, now believing that I'm a new creation in Christ, my actions and behaviors automatically line up with what I believe. So before, I would say, for me, I just thought I was a sinner saved by grace. I just was a sinner in my mind. And that was a lie because I was a Christian with no understanding. And so I'm like, there's sin is just our self-centeredness. It's the thing that kept us separated from God, which was the old identity of being self-centered. We can't serve self and serve God. And I didn't know that. I had no idea of that. And so now I do know that. And I tell people that all the time. Like, you can't live for yourself and live for Christ. They don't go together. They're going to war against each other the whole time. That's why we feel guilt and shame, even though we're Christians, and feel heavy with all the things, or get disappointed, or get offended, or do all these things, is because we're Christians, but we're living for self. We're still motivated by self. Which was like, that hit home for me, because I'm like, I was only thinking of myself 24/7. If that makes sense.
For sure. What kept growing in you? What were your eyes opening to more and more as time passed, as you're sitting in this thing?
I mean, the thing that has grown me the most is reading the Word and having a revelation of who God is from the Word. And in turn, like, it tells you who you are in Him. Whereas, like, before, I had no idea who God was. I didn't know. And so, because of not knowing Him, I didn't know who I was. And so I'm reading this, and it's transforming me. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, His love is so crazy and overwhelming. We can't even fully comprehend His love, but He prays that we know the depths of it. And I'm like, yeah, like, I'm getting there. I remember on a way to Bible study, if having a revelation, God was like, do you realize that you love me more than you love Adam? And I was like, oh my gosh, I do. I'm in love with you. And that was like the first time. And that was like last summer. So a year and a half into all this, just reading the Word and really diving into my identity and Him. And in that, knowing who He is. And because I know Him, I now know love. And before, I'm like, I couldn't even love correctly in my old self because I didn't know what love was. And now I can love well because I am well loved. And it's the kind of thing that you don't have to try to tell people or to show people. It's just like the glory of God. It's the goodness that we've tasted and seen that He is good, that people recognize. And I'm not, the best part of it is that I'm not even trying to do anything. I'm not trying to like produce fruit. It's just fruit being produced by His Spirit in me, that people can look at it and say, man, there is something so different about you. And so just, I want that. I'm like, it's the Lord, but he's real. I went from not thinking he was real to being like, oh my gosh, it's real. Even reading the Bible, I'm like, oh man, everything in there is so intentional and so purposed and so life-giving. I'm like, there ain't no way that all that is coincidence. There's just no way.
How long until you were starting to see Adam through the eyes of God?
Probably almost a year in.
Yeah. You're like, if this is true about me, then I guess it's also true about my husband.
Yeah, truly. Yeah. Because, yeah, probably a year in. A year, I would say. Because there was still a lot of times where we would fight about things and just silly things. And it was really just because I still had all these expectations on him, or he was doing things. I will say one thing that changed really quickly in Freedom was he struggled with porn. And anytime he used to tell me, because he was on this pedestal of like, he is great and I'm unworthy, whatever. Anytime he would do that, I'm like, man, like, I'm not good enough. I'll never be good enough. I'm never going to measure up. And so this went on for 9 years, and then enter Freedom. He came to me and he told me, or whatever. He says he confessed so that he no longer felt guilty, which is great. He came to me and was like, hey, I did this. And I was just like, why are you doing that? That's not for you. That's not who you are. You don't need to do that. And it like did not faze me and myself at all. But my heart was moved for him, because I'm like, that's not who you are either, though. That's not for you. And so instead of falling apart, I was able to encourage him with something that I was never able to do before.
How beautiful is that?
Yeah, the Lord. Yeah. Wild.
Let me ask you this, and we'll wrap up. If you get to go back in time and you get to go talk to sweet Courtney, who's just considering doing something terrible because of the lies believed, and you got to put your arm around her and give her a sweet hug, how would you minister to this girl?
Mm-hmm. This one touches home, because I have people even now that still deal with these thoughts that I just wish that they understood that those thoughts aren't their own. Those are not thoughts that they're intended to have. They're not meant for them. Like, that it is a lie that they should think that they're not worthy enough for life, or not worthy enough for love, or not seen or heard, because that's not true. Like, from the foundations of the world, God knew that you would be there, that you would be here. And he meant for you, and he purposed you to be here and to know him, not to live a life of for yourself, but to live a life in him, free from all the expectations that you have for yourself, or that you put on other people to meet for you. And so I would just tell them that they're loved. I would tell her that she's loved and that she's enough.
Man, the first time I heard you testifying, I think Savannah sent me an Instagram thing. Like, she was videoing you and you were just on your knees in the corner and you were just speaking powerfully for the Lord. And I don't know. I think that video went viral or something, that she put it out there. I don't know, but I saw that. And so much of the time, someone like Savannah or someone like Eddie or someone, like, they tell me about someone, they're like, yo, this person gets it. And I'm always like, really? I'm always like, do they? And then they're always right. They'll show me a video. And I remember texting Savannah and I was like, yo, who is that? What is going on? And I had just seen like a life that looked completely changed. I had never met you. I'd never spoken to you, but I was like, yo, this is so beautiful. And I was rejoicing.
Yeah.
And then I got to meet you a few weeks ago in Ohio, and to see that while you're growing in wisdom and discernment, and maybe you're not just fire hydrant killing people with it, this truth is still growing in you and it's not changing, and you're still excited by the gospel every single day. And I'm just saying this to say you are a testimony to us, and your growth in truth has been just beautiful, just to see from last year to this year to hear you come on to my Bible study and to speak life and to do it on this podcast. I'm just overwhelmed by how much you've been loved by God. And so it's just a blessing and testimony to me. So thank you for being loved by God.
I listened to a lot of the stories, and it is so true that every one of them, you're like, that was me. I did that. So it's been, you've been a blessing. This whole ministry has been a blessing to so many people. I know that for sure.
And we're just going to keep going, right?
Yep.
Thanks so much, Courtney. Wow, that episode is so powerful, just to see her life lived, to see how she speaks life to people. And many people have been where she is, but they don't have the answer. So if you're struggling with anxiety and depression and perhaps suicidal thoughts, then this prayer is for you. Father, reveal to me the lies that I'm believing that's putting me in this position. Show me the truth of who you have made me in Christ so that I can see it and receive it. I'm having a tough time believing it because my life lived doesn't add up to what you've said, but I know that I'm saved by your faithfulness. So please reveal to me this truth so that I can put conviction around it, own it, and become it. Thank you for doing that. I know you will, because I'm praying it in Jesus' name. Amen. A resource that you can tap into is www.moregoodgospel.com. We have so many book lists on there, podcast episodes. There's so much. Links to all of it. I think you will be blessed. So check out www.moregoodgospel.com and be blessed.